All right. Welcome to 4 Steps to Great Facilitation with Marcia Pachinski. That's me and Betty Martin. And today we are going to be talking about 4 things that you can do to make your facilitation amazing, whether you're working with small groups, large groups, working with clients, working with friends, leading a business meeting, whatever that is for you. My name is Marcia Pachinski. And I am the co-founder of Cuddle Party and the co-creator of Foundations of Facilitation, which is a 2.5-day facilitation training weekend. And my co-presenter today is Betty Martin. I'll let her introduce herself.
Hi, I'm Betty Martin. I'm one of the other co-developers of Foundations of Facilitation. I've been I got acquainted with Marcia via Cuddle Party. I've been facilitating those for a number of years. And before that, facilitating just a bunch of other stuff in various forms. So when we started putting our heads together on this one, we found that we had a lot of things in common and a lot of things that we learned from each other, and we just had a lot of fun with it. So that's why we're here.
Yeah. All right. So those of you who are listening in, if you want to follow along with what we're saying, there's a handout. If you go to cuddleparty.com/facilitation-handout, so you can see the information we're going to be talking about there. Again, it's cuddleparty.com/facilitation-handout, all one word, lowercase. And you can check that out and follow along. And this call is being recorded, so you'll be able to listen to it again afterwards. And you'll get an email about that after we do the call. Stay tuned on the call. We're going to talk about the upcoming facilitation training weekends, and we've got a little special offer for those who are on this call. So you definitely want to stay tuned for the whole call so that you can take advantage of that. But without any further ado, we will just launch into step number one. So again, this is 4 steps to great facilitation. Step number one is take care of your own needs. The reason this is the first one is it is one that a lot of facilitators forget. We get really focused on what our clients need, what our guests need, logistics, so on and so forth, what your assistants are asking questions of you about, that sort of thing. It's really, really important that you make sure that you take time to take care of your own needs. So what does that look like? Well, there's a few things you can do. First of all, I like to have a little quiet time to check in with myself before an event. So whether that's just taking 5 minutes to do a little breathing, ask myself just how am I feeling. I like to, check, am I hungry? Am I thirsty? Am I tired? Just where am I on a 1 to 5 scale on my energy level? Just to kind of get clear about where I'm at. And then if anything comes up that I can address, I can address it. If there's, if I'm just really tired or worn out or I've had a really hard day or something like that, just really being able to acknowledge that for myself, and if it's, relevant, acknowledge that for my participants. And it's really nice to be able to take that time to just check in. Along those lines, you want to make sure that you're rested, fed, and hydrated before an event. I've got my water bottle right here next to me while I'm doing this call, so you might hear me do this. Taking sips of my water, made sure that I had that while I was before I got on the call. You also want to make sure that you are not completely stressed out, completely frazzled, exhausted, because you want to have energy to give to your participants on the call. Same thing with food. I know that's one that a lot of us forget, especially when we're running off to teach an evening class. Sometimes we forget to have dinner beforehand, and then you're halfway through a 2 or 3 hour workshop or event or discussion, or you're at a lunch meeting at work and you forgot to bring lunch and you're starving and you're starting to crash. So make sure that you're not only fed, but fed with stuff that's not going to crash you out. Another thing you can do to take care of your own needs, and this is one of my favorites, is have somebody there whose job is entirely to support you. So when I'm running an event, when I'm facilitating a group, I love to have somebody who's my assistant or who's just there for moral support. I love doing these calls with Betty because we kind of can be each other's support. We're doing little text message check-ins the whole day before we get on the line, and We're gonna, you know, we have this, the capacity to talk after the event, and if I'm having a hard time with something, she can take over, that sort of thing. So your person could be a co-facilitator, like she and I are with each other, or it could be just an assistant or a friend. A lot of times I have a discussion group that I facilitate once a month, and some of my regulars at this point, I've been doing it for 2.5 years, some of my regulars will take that job, and they'll just make sure that the door gets answered so I don't have to go do that, to let people in. They'll make sure that I have my sign-up sheet that goes around. They'll make sure that, you know, all the upcoming events get announced so I can focus on just facilitating the conversation. And they hold all the things in their heads that I don't have to hold it all in my head, and they make sure that things get done. So that's really, really awesome to have somebody who's just there to support you. And the fourth thing that you can do to take care of your own needs is to know your limits. So, example, if you are not somebody who's comfortable with intense emotion, don't teach a workshop that requires a lot of emotional intensity. You know, you are not, as a facilitator, you're not supposed to be able to do everything. You're not supposed to be superhuman. So this item of taking care of your own needs is sort of about acknowledging that you do have limitations, and you should really acknowledge that and go with it and not make yourself wrong for that. And if some facilitators really want to be all things to all people who come through their door, and it can be really great to just be like, no, I'm not available for that, or, you know, let me refer you to somebody else for that kind of work. That's not my area of expertise. It's beyond my pay scale, whatever that is, whatever somebody's coming to you for that is outside of your skill set or outside of your knowledge or just outside of your range of what you're able to do. So again, check in with yourself before your event. Make sure you're rested, fed, and hydrated. Have somebody there whose job is entirely to support you, and then know your limits. If you do those four things, you'll go pretty far in taking care of your own needs. And with those things handled, even if you do none of the other three things on this list, you're already way ahead of some facilitators out there who just forget that they're somebody that has to be taken care of first. Otherwise, there's nothing to give. And you really want to make sure that you have your best to give by doing this. Betty, do you want to add anything to that?
Cool. Sure. One is that knowing your limits, not only your limits in general, but also your limits for that particular time. So I'm a person who's very comfortable with a lot of emotional intensity, particularly in an event that I'm leading. I'm also comfortable with a lot of physical intensity, erotic intensity. I can facilitate something that's quietly talking in a church basement. I can facilitate something that's running naked through the woods. But not necessarily all the time. So it might be that, you know, this weekend's coming up, I'm comfortable with this end of the spectrum, but I really, this is not the time that I can do a really intense emotional thing. So I know that going in. So it may change from time to time, is what I'm saying. Yeah.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah. So the second of the four things four steps is to create a strong and safe container. And I love this one because it just makes such a difference to me if I'm attending or leading either one. We're mammals, and so we need a certain amount of feeling of safety before we can put our attention on anything else. And, you know, life is not safe. We are going to get hurt sometimes. We're going to get offended. We're going to get scared. We're going to get sick. We're going to die at some point. So life is not safe. On the other hand, life is completely safe because you will live through all the things that you live through until you don't. So it's kind of a paradox there. It's also true that sometimes you are safer than you realize you are, or you're not as safe as you realize you are. You could have a tiger standing behind you and not know it and feel perfectly safe. You could also be in a perfectly reasonably safe place and be freaked out because you're just reminded of something from the past. So what's helpful in facilitating a group is that we want to provide for actual real-time physical safety, which means we want to know where the fire escape is. Depending on the situation, we might want to have a first aid kit around. We don't want hot wires sticking out of the walls. You know, we want to protect people's actual physical safety. We're not going to let people into the event who are not qualified or dangerous or drunk or whatever the case is. So that's one aspect. But really what takes, and you probably already do that without even thinking about it, what takes more thinking and attention and a little more finesse is helping people have a sense of safety or a feeling of safety. And this is sort of more along an emotional realm. Because when we feel like we're safe, then we have enough attention to look around us, to take in new information, to experiment, to explore, to adventure and question. And that's what we want our guests, students, clients to be able to do. So how do we create a sense or a feeling of safety? One is that when something is reasonably predictable and we kind of have an idea of where we're going, we can feel safer. So we want to have a strong opening. And that opening is what helps create that sense of safety. So you want to introduce yourself so people know who you are. I mean, it seems really obvious, but I've actually been at events where someone stood up and started talking and I had no idea, is this the person? Is this the introducer? Is this, you know, the manager of the facility or what? Who is this person? So you want to introduce yourself and allow others to introduce themselves as well. So if you're in a small group and you have, you know, 5, 10, 20 people in the room, people want to know who else is there. You want to help them create a sense of relatedness to each other. So whether it's name and where you're from or whether it's 5 minutes about, you know, the nature of whatever it is that you're talking about, that will vary. But there needs to be some form in which people can introduce themselves. If you're in a really big group, you know, 100 to 200 people in the room, you're not going to have time for everyone to introduce themselves, but you can still have something where you turn to your neighbor, you shake their hand, some way for people to answer their curiosity about who else is there, and that makes them feel a lot safer. And they don't have to, they're not having to pretend that they don't notice that there are other people in the room. Another part of a strong opening is to say the name of the workshop. Again, this seems really simple, but I have been in places where that was forgotten. And I think you, Marcia, were saying one time that you were teaching something and somebody stood up and said, am I thinking of you? Is this you that tells the story?
I was actually at a workshop that somebody else was teaching. It was one of these big seminar workshops, and the guy at the beginning made a point to announce what the workshop was because he was one. It's one of these ones that they hold in hotel conference ballrooms, like in ballrooms, mm-hmm. right, at mm-hmm. hotels, with 150, 200 people in it. And he was making sure that he said the name of the workshop because one time he didn't, and they are doing all this transformational stuff and life goals and all this stuff. And this, he was about 2 hours into it. It was like a weekend-long workshop. And this guy stands up and he's like, you know, this is really interesting stuff. I'm really enjoying myself, but I'm really curious what this has to do with insurance. And it turns out he was supposed to have been at a different seminar in a different ballroom down the hall. And he didn't realize he was in the wrong workshop. So he was having a great time and getting all kinds of stuff from it, but not what his employer was paying him there to be there for. So
yeah, exactly.
So yeah, it's important also because you want to make sure people are in the right room.
Right.
Which seems yeah. really obvious, but sometimes you'll be in a, you know, especially if you're doing workshops at conferences where there's a bunch of different workshops mm-hmm. going on at the same time.
Yeah.
Or if you're in a facility where other people are hosting things and people might walk into the wrong room. It's really, really important to do that.
Yeah. So one of the other parts, thank you, one of the other parts of a strong opening is to review the guidelines that are going to be in place for the time that you're together. Because if you don't, what the people in the group will do is wonder what they are and get distracted by wondering, is it okay if I take my shoes off? Is it okay if I get up and go to the bathroom? Is it okay if I talk to my neighbor? You know, am I supposed to be taking notes? All these kind of questions will come up, and they distract people from being able to be there and do what they're there to do. And they don't have to be complex, but it's very helpful to cover a little bit of the logistics. This is where the bathroom is. It's fine to get up. There's snacks over there. Please don't bring the snacks over to the blankets, whatever that is. And you set part of that safety by your tone of just, you know, recognizing that here's what our needs are and here's how we're going to address them. And that in itself creates a certain feeling of safety, because it shows that you are present, you're here, you notice what's going on, and you're connected to reality. That always helps people feel safe. So reviewing the guidelines, it matters less what the guidelines are than it does that they're clear. People will go along with pretty much whatever guidelines you set out, you know, within reason, as long as you state them and as long as they're clear. And the other, which is sort of an extension of that, is give a sketch of what will be happening for your time together. So as an example, in Cuddle Party, what happens is there's about a 45-minute intro, welcome circle, workshop-y part of the evening. And then after that, it's freestyle for the rest of the evening. So people know that right up front. They know that, oh, the workshop-y thing's not going to go on all night, and I will get a chance to snuggle with my buddies. If the weekend is a lecture series, that's very different than, you know, we're going to talk a while, and then we're going to get up and play some games, and then we're going to go outside, and then, you know, we're going to... it doesn't mean that you necessarily have to know what your minute by minute or even hour by hour schedule is, but that you let people know that. So it may be that we're going to talk for a few minutes, we're going to introduce ourselves, we're going to get up and play some games, and then before lunch we're going to have some time where we don't know what we're going to do yet, but we're going to find out when we get there. That information is helpful. So what I'm saying is, you don't have to know your schedule minute by minute, but just give that information. So that's
can I say something?
Yeah, please.
Yeah. So those of you who are on the call at the very, very beginning, before we started the recording, we actually did a little. Okay, we're going to turn off the mute. Or we're going to turn on the mute, and then we're going to start the recording, and then we're going to get started. And at the beginning, we introduced ourselves. We did a lot of these steps.
Mm-hmm.
So you can even though all of it was in the recording of this call, we did hit almost all of those, even in this call. So you can kind of listen to that when you go back
yeah.
and listen to the recording.
Yeah, thank you. So that's part of the safe container, the strong opening. And another one is a strong closing. So... you want to give people an opportunity to integrate what they've learned, especially if it's been a lot of experiential stuff, physical stuff, emotional stuff, particularly if you've taken them into sort of really new emotional territory. If you just throw them out on the street after that, it's often very difficult to, you know, I went through this amazing experience. Now what? What the heck was that about? What the heck did I do? And how the heck am I going to take it back into my life? So having some form of closing at the end where people can integrate what they've learned. If it's an intense workshop and it's been going for several days, this might be a considerable part of time. You may spend a couple of hours on this. You know, it may be a really integral part of the workshop, or it may be just, you know, a closing circle at the end for people to say a few words of what they learned about themselves or what they appreciate about themselves or something like that. It can be very simple. It's also helpful at the closing to point out or help people notice how this material and this experience does apply to their real life. In one of the courses that I teach that's for professional hands-on healer-type folks, we spend pretty much the whole afternoon, the last day, with each person being able to talk and brainstorm about how does this apply to my particular practice. So it's really a big part of that last afternoon. And also, I love to do this. Not everyone likes to do this, but this is my personal piece, is that I love to give people an opportunity to express their appreciation and gratitude for what they've just experienced. There's a couple reasons for this. One is I think it helps to integrate it, and Lord knows we could all use more opportunities for gratitude. But for me personally, if I have everybody in the workshop coming up afterwards to thank me because it just is a natural, wonderful thing to do that comes out of their heart, then I spend a lot of time giving even more attention out. And I don't really enjoy doing that after it's over. So what I do is when we're still in the circle, I take a few minutes to ask for people to share their appreciation of me as a teacher and what they have noticed and that's been helpful for them. And I like to hear it, something that's tangible. You know, it's nice to hear, well, you're wonderful, you're a great person. That's not really so useful for me personally. I want to hear what it is that really worked for you. And so I build that in, you know, in the last part of the workshop so that people have had a chance to express their gratitude and then they're done with it and they can integrate that and take it with them. So that's my personal preference there. But the main thing about creating a safety is that you do what you said you were going to do. If I'm suddenly changing horses in midstream, all of a sudden, you know, it's not safe for the people. They have to figure it out all over again. They don't want to do that. And the other thing, and this is more a kind of a soft skill, is making sure that people feel seen and heard by you. They want to know that you notice them, that they're in the room, and that if they have any difficulties, that you are sharp enough to notice and be present for them. You know, they don't want to be invisible to you, of course. So helping people feel noticed and heard, and if they have a concern, listen, that sort of thing, has a lot to do with their safety. Those are the main things that I think of. You want anything, Marcia?
I mean, basically, I would just add that listen to how we close out the call, because we're going to be doing some of these things on the close. And it's a little tricky with a teleclass, but you'll hear us do it in a different way for the teleclass. And I also wanted to say that I also like the appreciation and gratitude. And one of the tricks that I use when I'm facilitating discussions, which I do a lot of, is to have everyone, I leave about 10 minutes at the end if it's a 15-person group or so, and just have each person say one thing that was helpful for them, which does two things. One, they are generating what was useful for them themselves, so I don't have to point it out, and other mm-hmm. people can kind of get how it applies. And it sort of implicitly is, here's something I'm grateful for. So that's a mm-hmm. nice way mm-hmm. to wrap up discussion type, like small discussion mm-hmm. groups for those mm-hmm. of you who lead those kinds of groups.
Also, people learn from each other that way.
Yeah, definitely.
Oh, she got that out of it. Oh, wow, I didn't think of that. That's cool.
Oh, yeah. I didn't know I could apply it like that. That's such a good idea. Yeah, definitely.
Which actually reminds me that at the beginning of this call, one thing we did not do was say how long the call was. So let's do that.
It'll be about
now.
An hour and 15 minutes total. So we're half an hour in. We have another 45 minutes to go. Thank you, Betty.
So this is an example of how we goofed up and forgot to tell you that. And by acknowledging it and bringing it right out into the middle of the table, so to speak, that's another way to create safety is to notice the elephant in the room and acknowledge it. So 75 minutes, that's our plan. Great, thank you. Other thoughts on that one?
No, let's go ahead to the next step.
Cool, all righty. You want to take that one?
Sure.
Okay.
All right, so step number three, this one again may seem really obvious, but you'd be surprised how many people don't do this, is know your material. Know what you're talking about. So we're working pretty much straight from the handout for this call. But it doesn't really matter whether you have a handout or not. You want to have an outline at least. Even if it's just five things jotted on the back of an index card or, you know, a 20-page, you know, outline of how all the exercises are going to go and everything that you're going to do and what you're going to make sure you say at each point. It doesn't really matter how detailed or not detailed the outline is as long as you know your material. And I've been teaching classes and facilitating for 8 years now, and I've had some howlers mess up, so this is something that I love to remind myself of periodically, because even if I've taught the material before, if it's been a while, or if usually my co-facilitator teaches something, then I might not know it as well as I think I do. So before I teach a class, I always like to go and read through everything, make sure my handouts are clear, and then also make sure my outlines are clear, so that I know what I'm talking about. For Foundations of Facilitation, which is a 2.5-day workshop, we actually have two outlines. We have a short version and a long version. I think the short version is 4 pages, and the long version is about 30 pages, so that we know sort of an overview of everything that we're doing. And then there's an even shorter version of what we're covering each day that the participants get. So sometimes you might have multiple outlines, depending on how complex your workshop is, but it's super helpful to have this, and you'd be surprised how many people don't do that. The second thing about knowing your material is to do a test run of the material before you present. So I think this is the third time Betty and I have taught this teleclass. A lot of this material we've taught before. It's not just the material, but it's also doing a test run of your format. So if you're doing a teleclass and you've never done that before, you might want to practice. Get a couple of friends on the line a couple days before you're supposed to give it and go through the call. If you've got those of you who go on to become Cuddle Party facilitators, one of the things that we do in that is we have people run three review Cuddle Parties, which are basically test runs with friends and family and people that you know. And you get to tell them that it's your first time. So you can do a test run. Which leads into the third thing about knowing your material, set expectations with your participants if the material is new. So it's a really useful thing to know that you do not have to look like a total 100% pro, like you've done this a million times every time you get in front of a group. Especially if it's a small group, especially if it's a low price point for the workshop that you're doing, it's totally fine to say, you know, this is the first time I've taught this material in this format, so I welcome your feedback. Please let me know. Even people who are really, really savvy and they've done this stuff a million times, you know, they might change their stuff based on what feedback they get. And knowing your material and then also knowing where the weak spots are in your material is a really, really helpful thing. So knowing it isn't just what are you saying, it's also being aware as much as you can be of what you're not including. That can be really helpful. And then the last thing about this, and this is something a newbie mistake that I see people make a lot, is to teach something that you have experience in, not just something somebody else teaches, not somebody else's theory. So sometimes I'll see people get really excited about a book, or they'll get really excited about a workshop that they took, and they will go out and just start teaching it. But they don't necessarily have the full background. And I was guilty of this when I was first starting out. I did this a couple of times and fell flat on my face and embarrassed myself quite a lot, actually. Sometimes we get really excited about something we've learned, or we're really passionate about something. But it's really helpful to make sure that you have experience in that. And when I say experience, I mean either you have worked with clients on this before, if you have a private practice and you're trying to introduce some new concepts. You know, you want to test it a few times before you take it to a group. or something that you've worked with yourself directly in your own life and really worked with kind of extensively and maybe taught to a couple of friends and had them work with, that sort of thing. So you don't necessarily have to have one-on-one clients. Not all of you do, I know that. But you want to make sure that it's not just theory. You have, like, practical experience. So an example of how we structure that in our training is we start Foundations of Facilitation, which some people will then use to become cuddle party facilitators and some will not. We start it off with a cuddle party. And we do that for two reasons. One, anyone who's going on to become a cuddle party facilitator has now experienced a cuddle party. That's important. And two, everybody knows the material we're talking about. We have a common workshop experience that we're pointing at when we're giving examples throughout the rest of the weekend. So knowing your material, you want to have an outline, you want to do a test run, you want to set the expectations. Maybe it's the first time you've taught that, so you want to set that. Maybe it's something you've taught a million times before and you're looking to refresh the material a little bit. That could be another thing that you set expectations around. You might say, yeah, I've taught this 27 times. It's starting to feel like it's a little stale and I'm wanting to revamp it. So, I would love your feedback on this. Or maybe you're going to offer a bonus for people who give their feedback or something like that. And then, obviously, teaching what you have experience in. So those are some ways that you can do that. And if nothing else, just remember the first one, have an outline. That will go a really, really long way in making you look cool, calm, and collected when you're in front of a group. Betty, do you want to add to that?
Yeah, I think what's important here and what's often forgotten is that you don't actually have to know everything. And you don't have to be an expert, really, on anything. What you do owe your people is to be honest about what you do know and are able to present and start with what you already know instead of what you don't know. So, for example, I am qualified to teach the foot steps, 1, 2, 3, 4, to the foxtrot. I mean, me personally, I could do that. But to actually teach you how to really enjoy it and finesse it, I have no clue. So if I were going to offer to teach the foxtrot, I would say, I know the steps, that's all I know. So if that's what you want to learn, you come to my workshop. It'll be about 10 minutes, right? But someone
I'll come to your 10-minute workshop, Betty.
Yeah, perfect. But someone who really has experience with the dance itself and has experience teaching, they could spend a whole week on it and take you to a completely different experience. Because they would be able to see things in watching you dance that I wouldn't be able to see. So you don't have to be beyond the experience level that you are. You just need to be honest about what it is that you're actually offering and know that much of it.
That's a really good point. I do think there's a lot of value in really just trying to teach what you know.
Mm-hmm.
I do see a lot of facilitators, and this is the thing about teaching, too, because, a lot of times when you're facilitating, you're also teaching. Sometimes you're facilitating and you're just facilitating. You're not actually teaching very much.
Mm-hmm.
But you still want to know where the boundaries are. You want to know what is included, what's not included. So even if it's just, like I said, I do a monthly discussion group, and I mean, literally the outline for that is I have three to five questions that we might get to if the group doesn't generate. And they're talkers, and there's a bunch of regulars, so they all know how this works, right? But I still have to steer the conversation. I still have to know, be able to listen for what's outside of the range of what the topic is, right? There's a topic every month. It's not just a free-for-all.
Mm-hmm.
So I need to know, if we're talking about communication and relationships, and we start getting into a lot of subtle theory about boundaries, right, that might be a good topic for another discussion, and I need to steer it back into communication. So it's kind of, you really want to know what you are covering as well as what you're not covering, and just listen, be able to listen for it when it starts to enter into the room, because you can very easily lose control of a group if they get onto a hot topic that that isn't exactly where you want it to go. In Cuddle Party Land, it's a little different because the facilitation of that is you're formally teaching for about 45 minutes to an hour, and then it's freestyle cuddling, and it's just social time. So the discussion there is really people talking about whatever they want to talk about, but you still want to listen for things that are not appropriate for that group. And we had a funny story one time. We were Reed Mahalka, who was the co-founder of Cuddle Party with me, we were hosting a cuddle party in New York right when we first started, and it was a great group, really smart, interesting people, but somehow things got really quiet, people were getting a little sleepy, and somebody started a conversation about the Black Plague, and they were getting really graphic about it. And it was one of those points where you're like, okay, deep, detailed discussion of what happens when somebody gets the plague might be outside the realm of what's appropriate at a cuddle party. So know your material and know what's in bounds and know what's out of bounds. So, yeah.
Cool.
All right.
So let's look at
the fourth
one. Do
you want to hit the last one? Yeah.
Yeah. The fourth one is, so we've had take care of your own needs, create a strong, safe container, know your material, and the fourth one is balance, freedom, and structure. So I want to say just a little bit about the difference between teaching and facilitating. In teaching, you have certain material that you want to cover because that's why people paid to come see you. So if I'm, you know, teaching a lecture class in American history, then I have certain things I know that I want to cover that the students don't yet know that needs to be covered. In facilitating, what I'm wanting to do is to make it easier. I mean, that's what facilitation means, to make it easy. I want to make it easier and accessible for my participants to have a particular experience or range of experiences, or the possibility for a range of experiences. A lot of times, of course, we combine them, and that's, you know, entirely appropriate. But I just think that's a helpful distinction. So, which leads into different kinds of events are going to need different kind of structure, and it's partly going to depend on, you know, how much of it you're teaching, how much you're facilitating. But it's structure that lets you, that does several things. One, structure is what creates a container in which people feel safe enough to go into a more personal experience. And also structure is what lets you sort of carry the group from one step to the next step, so that by the time you get to the end, you've had some kind of resolution. So, for example, in events I've led that can become very emotionally intense because people are revealing stuff and they're dealing with conflict, I know, if this is a three-day weekend or a three-day event, I know that on Saturday afternoon, pretty much the shit's going to hit the fan. People are going to be pretty really working it hard. So I know that on Saturday evening, we're going to have some sort of resolution time that needs to happen. And I also know that by Sunday afternoon, by Sunday lunchtime, I want to be have progressed to a certain place so that by Sunday afternoon, the harmony has come to a different level where people are understanding each other and they're seeing each other more clearly and ready to go someplace new. I know that's going to happen over the course of the weekend, so I'm watching that and guiding the group as closely as I can to let that happen for them. So structure is what allows you to do that. It's kind of like if you have a real strong riverbank, you can carry a lot of water in that river. If you don't have much of a bank, you know, it spills over. You can't really carry much water. So structure is actually really, really important. And it doesn't mean that you have to be completely rigid with it. It depends on what you want to accomplish. If you are determined that you've got to get this amount of information across, you know, it's going to be more like a lecture, and that's fine if that's what you've agreed to offer. On the other hand, it could be a much more open-ended event. It could be that we are coming together for this weekend to mutually explore the experience, for example, of contact improv dance with the theme of energy. And I'll be ringing the bell at 9 a.m. and at 12 for lunch and at 5 p.m. for dinner, and that's pretty much all I'm going to do. That's fine as long as that's what people came for and know that that's what to expect. So, again, it just depends on what your needs and intentions are. So that's the role of structure. The role of freedom is that within that structure, people need to have a certain amount of freedom in order to experiment, explore, find what they need to find, and in order for them to be surprised by what they can find. So it's the structure that creates the freedom, ironically, but there also has to be enough freedom within the structure for people to experiment. You don't plan out every response and reaction and thought they're going to have, because for one thing, it doesn't work. You'll be disappointed. And the other thing, that you won't learn anything if you think you already know what they all know, because you don't. So when you have a lot of structure, or when you have a lot of structure, you know, people will feel fairly safe with that. You'll just, you know, march down the line. If you don't have much structure, or if your structure is one that's very open-ended, you'll need a lot more sense of safety for people to enter into that. And a cuddle party, again, is a great example, because all the structure happens up front. Then we turn them loose, basically, for the next couple hours. So we've already established the safety at the beginning. And, you know, for the second part, it's very unstructured or not visibly structured. The other thing about balancing freedom and structure is being attentive to dealing with the unexpected, which hopefully there will be plenty of, in the sense that people are going to be discovering new things. You'll be noticing new things. Your ability to respond, you'll reach into your toolkit and pull out what is needed. Sometimes that can make for a pretty big shift in the focus of the conversation. The other thing I wanted to talk about here is that, you know, and this relates back to starting with what you do know, is that, you know, when I first began, I think what I call my first baby steps in facilitating was simply being part of a talking circle in which my job was to keep the timer going. So the basic structure was that we went around in a circle. Everybody had 2 minutes, for example, and that way we could ensure that everybody had a chance to talk. That's like the most basic structure there is. And if that's all you know how to do, but you do it well, you will provide a great service for people in that situation. So don't think that it has to be complex or anything. As long as each person has a chance to talk, then you've met your responsibility. And then it sort of it grows and gets fancier from there. You can do it in different orders. You can have, you know, nobody talks twice until everybody talks once. You can have, you know, lots of different forms. But you can start with something very, very simple. That's a perfectly good way to start.
Yeah, that's a really good point, Betty.
Yeah.
Yeah. Keep it simple should maybe be the fifth step in here. I know a lot of facilitators will really overcomplicate things, especially when they're first starting out. They'll think they'll need to dot every I and cross every T. And one of the things that has been great for me is that the more I facilitate, the more I trust myself, the more I trust my instincts with the group, it's still up to me to create a structure that everybody can play inside of,
mm-hmm.
but a lot more freedom can start to emerge. And I definitely see this with new cuddle party facilitators. Sometimes they're like, oh, God, I have to make sure that nothing bad happens and that, you know, nobody gets too out of control and that sex doesn't happen and, this is so much responsibility and I want to do a good job. But the structure of the cuddle party itself keeps things going. You just have to stick to the rules, just like the guests are sticking to the rules, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then there can be a lot of freedom for experimentation and trying things. And I liked what you were saying earlier, Betty, about kind of giving room for creativity. I think you were talking about this
mm-hmm.
In the strong, safe container, that we need safety in order to
mm-hmm.
be creative and to play. And I think this is, you know, the structure helps to create that safety. And if you have structure but no freedom, people aren't going to really be able to apply this stuff to their own lives. And some facilitators will almost try to make it such that, you know, that your experience has to then conform to whatever their workshop is.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And
right.
I've seen people
that is
really struggle with that. It is such a drag. It's
yeah.
not fun. You know, people don't get to learn from each other. Facilitators who really want to be right all the time sometimes have too much structure and not enough freedom.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you want to make sure that you let people have their own experience. On the other hand, you don't want to let them, you know, sometimes you get a situation, and I had one this the other night, actually, in a workshop that I was teaching, I was teaching a lot of stuff, but there was also discussion in it. And there were three people on the left side of the room that just wanted to comment on every single thing. And I had to really rein them in and give them more structure. And then I had to encourage the right side of the room to speak up.
Mm-hmm.
So I was encouraging the right side of the room's freedom while adding more structure to the left side of the room, just because, you know,
mm-hmm.
right and left is just how it played out. So sometimes you'll even notice that within individuals, you have to give certain individuals more structure or encourage certain individuals to feel less constrained. And that's, you know, again, kind of a soft skill, and that you'll get a sense for that balance the more you facilitate. So if you just have that in mind as you're going in, that you need both, I think it helps a lot for knowing what the ratio needs to be in any given moment.
That's really helpful, and I think it points to one other thing, Marcia, which is our ability as the facilitator to take in accurate information about what's happening in the room at every moment and how that shifts and changes. Sometimes we call this reading the room, how, you know, what's the energy in the room, what's the feeling in the room, what are you noticing now? Because it's taking in accurate information about what's happening now that actually enables you to respond appropriately, to know what to do. I mean, it's basically a principle of life. If you can't feel your toothbrush, you can't lift it. Like, the information that comes in your hand has to come before action can come out of your hand. So the more we can notice what's happening in the room, then we can do what needs to be done, you know, take it where it needs to go from there. So that is that's an art and a skill. And for me, a lot of that comes from remembering to slow down and take a breath. So there will be times when I'm, you know, particularly if things are happening, I'll just say, okay, I need to pause. Okay, look around. What's happening? What's needed here? And I've also noticed that the better I am able to do that and the more confidence I have in my ability to do that, the more I can support people's freedom to do what they need to do, because I trust my ability to see it and to notice it and support it and to do what needs to be done if something does need to be done. So I think I, you know, just the more I look at so much of life, I'm just coming back to this principle again and again, that the real work of it is noticing what's so. After that, the options become pretty clear. But it's being able to notice what's so that everything has to start with. So maybe that's
nice.
The fifth
like the,
point or something.
I like the tip to breathe.
Yeah.
That goes right back to the first one of take care of your own needs.
Mm-hmm.
Oxygen is an important need.
Yeah. And your parasympathetic nervous system.
Yeah.
Helps a lot. Helps a lot.
Really hard to take care of other people if you're holding your breath the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely, definitely.
You bet.
Nice way to bring a full circle there, Betty.
Yeah.
So, to review, basically, again, these are just four things that you can do to take your facilitation from good to great, from okay to good even. This will just, if you can put these four things in, regardless of your content and regardless of the format structure, you're going to see major improvements in what your participants are getting, how you feel, whether you feel depleted or energized afterward, and that sort of thing. So just to quickly review again, first one is take care of your own needs. The second is to create a strong, safe container for people. The third is know your material. And the fourth is kind of the softest one of these, is balance, freedom, and structure. And just notice what that balance is like for you. Shall we shift gears, or do you have anything else you want to say?
I think that's all I have on this.
All right. So how do you apply this? There's lots of different ways you can apply this. One of the things we've been talking about through here is the self-care. One of the things we've talked about is the structure, material, all of that kind of stuff. Foundations of Facilitation is a 2.5-day weekend workshop that we do Friday evening, all day Saturday, all day Sunday. We have a couple of them coming up. That we're going to offer discount for them, for people who are on the call, one on the East Coast, one on the West Coast, in the next 2 months. But the Foundations of Facilitation Weekend, we really go into depth on all of this stuff. So we talk about, you know, what do you need as a facilitator? How do you take care of yourself? We talk about how do you create that really safe space, particularly for people to explore intimacy on a personal and professional level. So the Foundations of Facilitation training came out of Cuddle Party. So we're really committed to creating containers that people can get emotionally vulnerable in, that people can get physically, like literally physically close, and feel like they're being protected and that they have their boundaries being honored. And that structure really goes a long way, and we talk a lot about how to create that in Foundations of Facilitation. We are also really big on how do you create an environment where people can communicate authentically, and things that you can be putting into practice in your own life that you will then carry into your workshops that will profoundly affect how people are relating in the workshops. We do a lot of stuff, like really funny exercises that are really, really helpful for how do you get related to a stranger. How do you create a sense of, hey, we're kind of the same. We're kind of the same person. We have stuff in common. I'm available to support you, and all of that kind of stuff really quickly, really easily. How do you do that when somebody walks in the room? How do you make them feel at home so that they're more likely to open up? Some of those things we talked about on this call, like you want to make sure that they know where they are and who you are and all that kind of stuff. But there's some other things you can do even before you get up at the beginning of the in front of the room that really makes the whole experience go really well for people, and we talk about that a lot in Foundations of Facilitation. The other thing, and I think this one's a common one for a lot of people who lead groups, like we lead groups, we facilitate things because we want to help people, but a lot of times in our helping people, we get really burnt out, and so then we start to either shut down or we start to make ourselves wrong for not being able to stay as open as maybe when we started, or not being as open as we expected that we could be in being able to give to people. So we spend an awful lot of time really delineating boundaries, your boundaries as a facilitator, what your needs are as a facilitator, and getting you really, really clear on the things that you need before you even get in front of a group in order to be able to give. And then how do you navigate when somebody throws something at you that you don't know how to handle or want something from you that you're not sure if you should give or not, like that gray area that a lot of us run into. So those boundaries and then the ability to really give and receive comfortably and with ease without burning yourself out, we talk about that a lot in financial facilitation, and that's one of the things that people are really, really stoked about when they come to the training. All right, so we just talked about what it is. Let's talk about when it is. So we've got two coming up. We've got one in New York in just a couple of weeks here. Betty, you're going to be in New York soon, right?
Yep.
Yeah, so
tomorrow.
Tomorrow, you're leaving tomorrow, yeah. So June 17th to 19th in New York City, Betty Martin's going to be leading both of these upcoming trainings, and I'll be Skyping in for both of them, as well as Len Daly, who some of you may have had contact with. He's another one of our trainers. He's fantastic. He'll be Skyping in as well. So that'll be in New York, June 17th through 19th. I know it's going to be a really intimate group, so I'm really excited for the people who get to have Betty for that weekend. It's a really sweet space that we've rented in the West Village. It's really cute. It's got a little backyard garden. There's lots of cute stuff. If you've never been to New York or if you love New York, it's a really great location in the West Village that we're going to be hosting it at. And Betty's a fantastic trainer, so you can go spend the weekend with her there. Or if you're more interested in the West Coast, July 15th through 17th in Joshua Tree, we've got this fantastic cuddle camping desert oasis thing going on that we're going to be doing the training at. And I think everybody's going to be staying on site, or we'll have the option to stay on site. And it's going to be really communal and homey. That training will probably be a little bit bigger. So you'll have more of a community experience of that training, and it's going to be really, really awesome. Lots of folks from Southern California, Arizona, and from all over going to that one. And Betty will be leading that one as well. I'll be Skyping in for that one as well. So if you want the details on this, you can go to foundationsoffacilitation.org and get all the download, read testimonials, all that kind of stuff. Normally, Foundations of Facilitation is a $595 weekend. That includes your food and training, and you know, if we can help you out with lodging, we usually do that as well. For the people on this call, we are doing a huge, steep, awesome discount. It is only $395 for the weekend. So it's a huge discount. It's $200 off. And basically, all you have to do is call up Len Daly, and he will get you hooked up. Just call him. You can either email him at len@foundationsoffacilitation.org, I believe is the address. It's len.daly, I'm sorry. Or you can call him 334-202-2794. All this information is on foundationsoffacilitation.org. But you need to call him to get the discount. You can't do it through the website. You have to actually pick up the phone and call him. We'd love to get you in the trainings, either one of them, if they're interesting to you.
That phone number
really
is
awesome.
Also at cuddleparty.com, right there, smack top on the front.
Yes,
that phone number.
Cuddleparty. So cuddleparty.com, foundationsoffacilitation.org, either one of those. Again, one in New York 2 weekends from now, and then one in Joshua Tree in the middle of July. Either one of those are going to be pretty awesome. They're both going to be really, I'm really excited actually about the venues that we have for each of them. It's going to be really fantastic. And as you can tell from this call, you're in fantastic hands with Betty. And I'm looking forward to stepping in for those. So yeah, it's going to be great.
Thank you.
Yeah, do you have anything else that you want to say about the trainings or the discounts or your travel plan?
No, just give us a call if you have questions. Yeah.
Yeah, if you have questions, please do.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
So we are done here in plenty of time. Do you want to open it up for questions?
Yeah, let's do a little question and answer. We'll take you guys off mute. And it might get
actually,
a little loud on the...
thing, actually, is to take yourself off of mute if you do have a question. And that is star
perfect.
6. And that way
star
people
six.
Who are... you know, listening while they're cooking dinner or something, we won't have to listen to your tofu frying. So star 6 will unmute you for questions.
anybody have any questions? We got about a little over 10 minutes. We got about 12 minutes left, mm-hmm. so we can take your questions.
Cool. See if there's anybody
still
here.
Phil in Toronto.
Hi, Phil.
Oh, hi.
Hi. My question is, a lot of this seems to translate directly between groups and facilitating a one-on-one session. Is there anything that you would change or that you think needs modifying for one-on-one work for facilitating?
Ooh, that's a great question.
That's a great question.
A brilliant observation, actually.
Yes.
Because they are pretty much the same,
They're
principle.
They're pretty similar.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that one thing with one-on-ones is generally you wouldn't have an outline. You might have a couple of key points that you want to hit with a client, but typically you'd be more responding to what's there in the moment with a one-on-one client. So that might be one thing I would change. You might also not be doing test runs of the material. So it's a little bit less, your material and your outlines would probably be less formally structured than it would be with a group. But I think taking care of your own needs, creating that container, the way you create the container obviously would be different. You're not going to stand up in front of the room and give it a big announcement about who you are if you're working with somebody one-on-one. But you still want to introduce yourself. You still want to give them a chance to talk about themselves, especially the first time you work with somebody. I like to ask both for one-on-one clients especially, but if there's time in a group as well, how people heard about me or heard about the workshop too. So that's something that you can do in a one-on-one setting that helps to create that safe container that gives you a little bit more of a sense of where they're coming from. How, you know, did they find you on a comment that you left on a message board? Okay, great, then you know what that message board was and you know probably what they were there for. Or did they see it from one of your friends on Facebook? Okay, then you know people in common, that sort of thing. That can be really great. Really good question. Mm-hmm. Betty, do you have anything you want to add to that?
Yeah, just that I think one thing that's really, it all translates, but one thing that's coming to mind is the principle that you don't have to be everything to everybody, whether it's in the group or with a one-on-one session, and that is that you get to start with what you know and that you're already good at. If you're really great at listening, then you offer listening. If you are really great at massage, then you offer massage. And as you gain other skills, you will have more skills to offer, and your sessions can become more varied and more complex. But you can already start with what it is that you already have and you already do. Just being clear about what that is. Yeah. And I actually teach a different workshop, which I'm teaching this coming weekend, that is all about one-on-one sessions, and many of these do translate.
I hope you'll run
Thank
it
you.
Again.
What's that?
I say I hope you'll run it again, and then I can find out about it more in advance.
You bet. You bet. Other questions? Anybody else?
Yes, hi. My name is Mark.
Hi, Mark.
Hi, Mark.
Yeah, hi. So I don't really so much have a question, but I just want to say, as somebody who attended this weekend a year and a half ago and who chose not to be a cuddle party facilitator, I think it's really great material. I think it's really helpful. And it's been hasn't been the whole thing, but it's been an important part of, for me, developing as a facilitator. And I use these principles regularly. I just actually during the call was looking at some of the wonderful testimonials I got from a workshop I ran last week, and people saying that they felt safe to do some personal growth things is an important part of that. So I just want to put that out there. I don't want to take up time from people who have questions, but I just thought I would put in my two cents for anyone who's listening.
Thank you, Mark. And you're doing a variety of different kind of things too, aren't you?
I am. I work, I think, I'd say, to put it briefly, in two areas. One is around a body-mind processes and really being present with what our experience is, and sometimes that can be emotional stress, managing stress. I'm a life
mm-hmm.
coach. But I also work with people around sexuality,
mm-hmm.
and so that's another area where can often be threatening and,
mm-hmm.
and challenging to people.
Right.
And so this has been helpful to me in both those areas.
Thank you. And thanks for the reminder that it's not just for people who want to be in Cuddle Party. That is how it's born, as Marcia had mentioned, but the skills are applicable anywhere. Thank you. Appreciate you speaking up.
You're welcome.
Hi, this is Sherry. I have a question for you.
Hi, Sherry. Yay!
I noticed on your website that there isn't obviously a facilitation workshop coming up in Toronto, but that there is the Like a Pro coming up. I'm actually away that week, and I'm just wondering if you have any plans for any of that workshop again or any other workshops coming to Toronto after September yet.
Oh, probably.
nothing finalized yet?
Not yet, but email me.
You.
I'll make sure you get notified. I'm quite easy when it comes to travel. If I have a handful of people who want me there and form the seed for an event, then I'll put some energy in and show up.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's good. Thank you.
You bet.
Yeah, I also want to say, if you want a Foundations of Facilitation to come to you, please let us know, because one of the hardest things for us is organizing in different cities. If we have a local organizer who can get a group of 8 people together, we, you know, are happy to work with you on that and pay you for your efforts, as well as, you know, let you come take the training for free. So do contact Len if that's something that's interesting to you. I know there's a bunch of people from Toronto on this call, and we've tried to have a couple of FOFs there that our local contact had some family health issues come up, and we weren't able to do it. So if that's something that's interesting to you, please let us know. We love to travel, and we are a really small organization, so we can always use help with that. And anyway, that's my plug for that.
Sounds good.
You have time for one more?
We do.
We certainly do.
Hi, Betty and Marcia.
Hi.
My name is Julie Carroll, and I want to appreciate what you did on the call. It was very clear and understandable and full of great information. I have facilitated a variety of different kinds of things, including personal growth and professional, for 35 years. I'm a relationship coach right now. I'm very interested in becoming a Cuddle Party facilitator. And even though, and I emailed this to Betty, I really am a wonderful person, but if I'm having to go through a process of learning things I already know, I'm not very well behaved. I noticed that.
Good.
I recently did a mindfulness training to teach mindfulness to kids, and I both know how to teach and I know mindfulness, and I just wanted to know how they applied the two. And the facilitators, bless their dear little 20-something souls, were not used to anybody who already knew how to teach and who already knew mindfulness.
Mm.
And
right.
You wouldn't want me in the room. So even though this stuff is absolutely fabulous and I wish I had seen it and heard it, you know, back in the day,
mm-hmm.
in 1976 when I first started facilitating something, I could have mm-hmm. really used this.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering, there was some kind of illusion on the webpage to some way of doing this step without doing this step. I mean, I would pay for the, you could
mm-hmm.
test me, you can,
mm-hmm.
you know, make me lead something. I'm not trying to get it out of supporting the organization or
mm-hmm.
anything.
Mm-hmm. That's a great question.
Ideas?
And where are you again?
I'm in Grass Valley, California, the Sierra Foothills near the Bay Area.
Fabulous. Yeah. That's a great question, because it does happen sometimes that people are kind of are very well qualified or overqualified. And we do have some options for that. We do have a virtual training, which is only for people who do have some experience and are qualified. Because for many people, you know, you need to be there in the room to get that experience.
Right.
What I would say is call us and let's talk about it. We'll figure something out.
Okay,
yeah.
Great.
The other thing is that I remember the first time I went to this training, I don't know, 6 or 8 years
too.
Ago, and I was basically I called Reed and Marcia, and I said, I'm doing something very similar already in Seattle. I'm basically overqualified for your program, but I would like to come and see what you're doing and let's compare notes. And they were very gracious and they said, sure, you know, and I was 50-something and they were 20-something. And when I went into it, I said to myself, okay, I'm going to take the beginner's mind and I'll just take whatever, you know, I'll take whatever is here for me to really take it in. And I'm not implying that you wouldn't do that or can't do that, but in my situation, I found that I actually learned some things, and it was good for me. And though I didn't need the training, there was still a place to go for me where I could go just a little bit more inside. It turned out to be actually quite sweet.
Well,
and so, as a general principle, I offer that to all of us who are well accomplished, and also, you know, there's always more. I'm not saying that you aren't smart enough to do that, or that you necessarily need to be in the room for this particular training, but just as a general principle. And what happened out of that story was that I basically saw that they kind of had this system nicely put together that I didn't have yet, so I just sort of dropped mine and joined their club. But that's a great question. Call us. We'll figure it out with you. Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks for asking. That was great.
Mm-hmm.
All right. We are at our time now. So if you have further questions, feel free to contact either of us, or especially Len. He's the most knowledgeable about training questions and that sort of thing. If you're interested in the other workshop Betty mentioned that she's doing called Like a Pro, you can contact her directly. And I like talking to people, so you can contact me. Really, I'm happy that you all joined us on the call. Thank you so much for your questions and for your time. I know that it's not always easy to make the time to listen to a teleclass, so those of you who called in and those of you who are listening after the fact, thank you for making the time. I really appreciate that.
Mm-hmm. Thank you all. Thank you, Marcia. Once again, it's fun to teach with you.
I love teaching with you, too. It's really great. I'm glad you showed up for that Foundation of Facilitation in 2005
It
was.
Okay.
Awesome.
Thank you
all. If you guys have any questions, let us know. Thank you so much for being on the line.
Okay. Ciao.
All right. Have a good night. Bye.
Bye-bye.